Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Once again, our guest today is Leslie Appleton Young. Leslie is the Vice President and Chief Economist of the California Association of Realtors, a statewide trade organization with about 175,000 to 185,000 members at the present time. Leslie directs the activities of the association's member information group. She oversees the analysis of the home market and brokerage industry trends, and she speaks constantly in front of groups. Leslie, welcome back.
Thanks so much, Bruce.
I thought we might start with the idea of median price, and where were we at the peak? Where did it get down to, and where are we now?
The peak was almost 600,000.
Isn't that amazing to just think of?
You know, wow. It was May of 2007. We were at 594,530. And again, this is a statewide median. So there were areas much higher and also much lower.
And I might just point out that I think there was certainly indications that we were no longer at the peak of the real estate market in May of 07. It just happened to be that the median price got to the peak, but it didn't feel like we were peaking, did it?
Well, what happened was transactions statewide started to slow in the fourth quarter of 2005.
Right.
But if you look at a market like Sacramento, where there was so much new construction, affordable housing, subprime borrowing, those instruments were 2 to 3 year fixed, and then they started to adjust. So purchased in 03, 04, adjusting in, 06, you started to see those markets, in the inland parts of California start to falter probably a full year before it showed up in the statewide data. And so what you had is these properties became distressed and started to go through the foreclosure process, is that sales at the moderate low end shrunk, whereas the high end was doing fine.
Right. So it was a skewed inventory.
It skewed the median price. The average would have been even worse. So you, for a year and a half after the transactional peak, you had the price peak, and then prices continued to go down. In 07 and 08, they bottomed in February of 09. At the same time, you had sales going up over 20-25%.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a disconnect because the share of what was selling changed so dramatically between the high end and the low end.
And we've never had any experience with a price decline like that.
Not in a statewide number. I mean, you've seen big shifts, and I'll point to the San Fernando Valley in the 1990s, where there were fires and floods and riots and an aerospace contraction, and you had a 3 year period where the median in that area went from, let's say, 225 down to 165.
Okay.
So you've seen that at local level, but the state has been so big and so diverse that we didn't see, anything like the 50%+ drop in prices over 2 years in the history of the housing market.
And the residue of that is we probably have a lot of owners that even put down 20% that owe more than their house is worth currently.
Absolutely. I mean, that's really the collateral damage of the downturn, is here you have someone that's got a good job, they have a good mortgage, their home is worth X, they're paying on it, and then as things start to crumble around them, the value of their home goes down, and they get into trouble. Although I will say that I think one of the things that needs to be looked at with some careful eyes in the future is just really the role of, cash out refis, and whether, because that certainly was a huge differentiator for this cycle, is the lack of equity in people on a razor's edge that actually had equity and were doing fine. But instead of taking the equity out and, investing or doing something else that would get a comparable rate of return, they took a trip, or bought a car or whatever. And that really was another component of the challenges we've been facing.
Well, I think part of that, too, is that we were allowed to think, first of all, we had such a long run-up in price that there was so many people that thought real estate could not hurt them.
Right.
And that pulling out equity would simply be replaced with another equity pile next year.
Right.
And sometimes it doesn't happen that way.
No.
The concept of strategic default and people upside down. So you have people perfectly capable of making a payment. Are there signs that a certain number of the foreclosures that we're looking at are really intentional and just, I think I'll go ahead and walk?
Well, I think there are people that look at the pros of that, which is not continuing to throw money into a property that will take years and years to perhaps get up to the value where it once was. But you have to weigh that against the damage, to your credit and to your, financial profile. I still remember quite distinctly a mortgage broker in Santa Cruz came up to me after a presentation at the local association and said, Leslie, I've looked through those loan documents up and down, inside out, and I just can't find the part where it says that if the home loses value, you don't have to pay on the mortgage.
No.
It's a fully charged question that I guess I'm going to dodge for right now.
No. Well, the fact that it's becoming prevalent is true.
And
it's becoming a little bit more acceptable the more it happens. And I guess that's the danger, is that people who would have never dreamt of it making that decision now have a neighbor and a cousin, and all of a sudden you rationalize, maybe it's okay.
Yeah, and it's not the black mark that it once was on your record or on your,
Well, Fannie Mae just came out with a statement, and this has to be pretty recent. It's so much in my mind that they will now allow you to get financing 2 years if you will deed in lieu their house.
And exactly.
Yeah, and that was pretty recent, right?
Yeah, deed in lieu or short sale. And it actually, the letter came out just a few weeks ago, but the new rules will take effect July 1st.
Okay.
But the new mortgage that you get within that, after 2 years, in most cases, it's going to require 20% down.
Okay. Well, since you hadn't maybe paid your payment for a while, you've saved up.
Right, exactly. Let's hope so.
Distress sales as a percentage of sale volume in counties like Riverside and San Bernardino, has it ever been this high?
No.
Okay.
No. I mean, we've never seen the foreclosure environment that we've experienced, and I will just do a recommendation to our mutual friend Sean O'Toole of Foreclosure Radar. It's an amazing site to go to even if you don't subscribe to the service. He just has a tremendous educational opportunity in his blog and in his monthly reports to really understand what's going on in the distressed market. But clearly, in areas like Riverside, other parts of the Central Valley going up north, it's 70-89% of the sales in a given a month, although we are seeing a slight rise in the percentage of sales that are short sales. And again, there's some incentives out there to, mm-hmm. to do so.
What about the mix of distressed sales depending on the price range? So are we really kind of pegged at the very high percentage of distress in the lower price ranges?
We are, but as the recession has gone on, it's more common to see a foreclosure or a short sale at the high end of the market. People that have gotten into trouble. So that part has been brought into the overall experience of the downturn.
In Riverside, we buy trustee sales at the courthouse steps, and we can go forward and project things. And that right now, in Riverside County, which is certainly a big county, there's approximately 3,000 square foot homes plus pending trustee sale.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of houses.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to be, I don't think we have buyers for those. And, and I would imagine most of those loan balances are $1 million or more.
Yep.
And I think that's the next shoe to drop, is that buyer won't be there in the quantity necessary. And so you're probably going to have a price hit and maybe a glut of inventory that far surpasses what you'd see the average, like 4 or 5 or 6 months of inventory. That range of inventory may, in fact, have 2 years worth.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, Bruce. I mean, at the upper end of the market, you just don't have the same, incentives,
First-time
buyers, you can't utilize FHA. I mean, it's just those prices just haven't adjusted enough to make them attractive.
Also,
and again, it's not the first-time buyer that I'm worried about. I mean, without the stimulus packages, they recognize a great deal, and California's for sale, and this is a tremendous opportunity. But it's really that trade-up buyer of past cycles who's had that nest egg and is ready to trade up, and some of that is happening, but not nearly on the scale that other cycles have had, just because of the loss in equity.
Well, when you have a median price of 600 and you have all the government programs really designed to help people that owe less than the Fannie Mae maximum loan balance, then you're really probably missing a good 35% or so of the market, where you've got people that owe $1 million and there's no goodies there for them.
Right.
And so that'll ultimately be a foreclosure. And I think what you're going to see is a condensation of value. You're going to have a range that tightens, where 500 square feet above, say, 3,000 square feet is going to be less meaningful in an appraisal than maybe ever.
Right.
And
right.
So that's on its way. What about the jumbo loan market and the spread between the conventional, the normal conventional fixed loan?
Well, actually the spread has come down to kind of the longer term.
Yeah, it's pretty normal now.
Like 1%, something like that. But, what I hear in the field is that these borrowers are putting, 30, 35, 40% down for some of these jumbo loans. So it's, again, that down payment requirement and also having a very strong FICO score are very important, because to a certain extent, and maybe not so much as a few months ago, but a lot of these loans are being held in portfolio by the lender. So they want to make sure that they've got a cushion going forward.
The reasons people bought in 06, how different is it now in 2010?
Well,
I mean, in 26, I would have think it would have been a very aggressive person thinking, I'm going to get bigger and better.
And I'm going to get richer. And
exactly.
Prices have gone up 20% the last 2 years. And, I think that was part of the reasoning as people went into these risky loans. It was, in 2 years when this instrument adjusts, I can either sell this house because, look, they're selling like hotcakes, or I can refinance and look how easy it was to get this loan. And what happened was when that adjustment came due, neither one of those options was readily available.
No,
so
yeah.
I think there's just a harsh reality has set in that you're not going to get rich overnight in housing, and you do have to be able to demonstrate your ability to maintain the payments on your assets. So I think it's really a market that's gone back much more to basics. I want to buy this home to live in and raise my family.
And it's got to be a much healthier market for that.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, there's definitely a feeling that, and this is, in trying to get cooperation from, if I talk to a congressperson or something like that, there's a real disconnect. When we use the word investor, I think I can see the word speculator run across their mind. And in this market, the speculator really has gone home. The investor who's trying to fix up houses and everything is sort of needed, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the banks don't have the resources to rehab and get those properties onto market in a timely fashion. So I really do agree with you on that one. Absolutely.
I'm going to be a moderator on an interesting panel coming up in June, and I guess the Fannie and Freddie are going to start bulk divisions. And I've been asked to moderate, and I'm not sure who all the panelists are.
Mm-hmm.
But that's going to be an interesting topic, and I'm wondering what size of bulk deals they're talking about and if there'll be restrictions on if those properties have to be retained and that type of thing.
When are they going to start doing that? I wasn't aware of that.
I'm not even sure the decision's been made.
Okay.
We were asked to host that just because our name was mentioned by people like Sean and so forth. And so I think it's an exciting opportunity. I'm actually trying to get Sean to be a panelist.
Because, that would be fabulous.
Well, I think we have, you know, there's a natural... Okay, my desire is let's break this into reasonable chunks to where we benefit the smallest guy possible if we can.
Right.
And a trustee sale would actually be an okay way to do that, where you could say, let's put a pile of these together, you know, instead of one house. And I don't mean the original trustee sale, but some kind of, you know, way to do that. And even the REO agent.
Mm-hmm.
The REO agents could say, okay, instead of listing these one at a time, we're now going to put them 10 at a time and sell them that way.
Right. And, you know, the faster we can move through this, the healthier it's going to be. I mean, the reality is there's just a huge chunk of negative equity properties that need to get through the process. So I think anything that can expedite that in a timely, reasonable manner is a good thing.
And I think what you just said is very important because – we have a lot of people in California and probably across the country, but since I'm here and I know this market, there has to be an awful lot of people that are showing tremendous character making a payment on an upside down property.
There are.
And the best way to reward them is to make them feel like there's hope for equity be replaced somewhat reasonably soon.
Right.
And that's the best way is to get through this, the least painful way, but the quickest fashion you can, and get to the point where, okay, now we actually have a legitimate amount of inventory and the mix is no longer dominated by the have-to-sell seller.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting the point you made about, you know, the opposite side of the strategic defaults really is, you know, these homeowners that are paying even when they're underwater. And I remember talking about this in the early 90s, again, with respect to the San Fernando Valley. And no doubt the inventory went up. I think we had over a 20-month supply during some months. But there were still a significant number of people who stayed put because it was their home, it was their community, it was their school system. And you're right. You know, the best way to get everybody back on a firm footing is to just move through this and restore confidence and a realistic sense of what housing prices are all about.
You know, when we have 60% or more people not buy it, or whatever percentage it is, what are they doing? Are they? I know there was a survey done where I was really surprised at how few a percentage became a renter.
Well, you know, I think they're moving back in with parents.
Yeah.
I think they're moving in with other households. I think they're moving in with their children. You know, this economic the downturn is not just anymore a housing downturn, right? It's affected every aspect of the economy. And so the idea is I just need to save on expenses as much as I possibly can until things get better.
And I think that one of the reasons I wanted to mention this is there's always this number that comes up to where there's 200,000 households created in California or something like that. And builders look at that and say, well, gee, we're not building enough homes. And you have to look at that with kind of a grin at this point and go, well, wait a minute. You're probably not building 30,000 homes right now. And the reason you're not is there's nobody there to buy them.
No, but at some point there will be.
Yes, absolutely.
And I don't think, you know, kids want to live with their parents forever and all that kind of stuff. But again, that's more than a few years out.
Well, what's fun about that is we are skewing artificially to the low side right now.
Yes, we are.
We're not building anything. And builders obviously are also going, well, I'm not going to create any building lots right now. There'll be a day where we're behind the curve.
Mm-hmm.
And the demand will accelerate far faster than the inventory can meet.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll have price support
by
natural causes.
Yeah.
California construction industry, how bad is it for them?
Well, I think it's been pretty bad. You know, the bulk of the jobs that were lost over the last couple of years, a huge proportion of those were in the construction area. But it's starting to heal a little bit. You know, we have seen housing starts on the rise for the past few months, and it will get better. I mean, those houses, dilapidated houses, are going to need to be replaced. Household formation will continue, and I think it will just be a dramatically reduced industry for the next few years, and then opportunities will arise and it will be back. I mean, it's, you know, our industry, housing, you know, broadly defined, has always been cyclical, and it will continue to be so. But we certainly are not going to see the engine of growth coming out of the housing sector over the next 3 to 5 years. It's got to come out of more, products and services that can be sold overseas. I think for the nation as a whole is really going to be the key.
Okay, so
emerging markets.
That was, that kind of answered a question. And we usually expect construction to lead a comeback and lower unemployment, and this time that's probably not going to happen.
No, and I mean, again, there's been a bit of an uptick. You see it in the Riverside data. You see it in the national data. But the fact that you have the labor market lagging so sharply and consumer confidence was up in March, but it's still half of what it was a couple years ago. I think it really has changed. This experience has changed behavior, and so people are going to be more conservative. So maybe the opportunities for builders lie in creating multi-generational housing.
Well, and I think the last report that I felt like I needed to do, part of the thing I had never really figured out myself was the demographics and the changes that are coming in the next 20 years and how different it'll be from the preceding 20 years.
Right, so, and, you know, Joel Kotkin just came out with a very, detailed report on, the demographics of California through 2050. And it's, very encouraging and stunning to look at the numbers and see how that differentiates us from Europe and some of the other states. I mean, we are growing, and that will entail demand for housing as we go forward. It's just not going to happen in the next 2 to 3 years because of what we've been through.
Yeah, it's just not even, but it will show up.
Right.
In Riverside, the unemployment numbers, until I looked at your report, I actually wasn't on top of it. I had the state number in mind, but unemployment close to 15%, and that's
correct,
the official number. And that probably translates to something over 20 when you consider the people that just have stopped looking.
Right.
That's a pretty severely hit area.
Yeah, absolutely. It's and again, the employment growth in Riverside for years was the leading county in California.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Does it follow that the worst hit areas with unemployment start to lose migration to areas that are healthier?
People are going to go where the jobs are.
Is that true for statewide as well? Are we losing people to other states that are healthier?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But it's starting to change. And again, you look for these leading indicators. I spoke a month or two ago up in Sacramento, and U-Haul came out with their report on destinations.
Mm-hmm.
And of the top 10 destinations in the United States, Sacramento was number 8, and a year before that it had been much, much lower down. So, people are moving there because housing is affordable and, they've been able to, find something, find some type of employment. But it really depends on the mix. I mean, Riverside is such a classic example of the forces that, you have affordable housing attractive on one hand, and initially you moved there and you drove to Orange County or LA County to work.
Right.
And then that changed dramatically in the last 20 years because you got a very well diversified economy out there. So I think that will, that will come back, that will heal itself. But again, it's just going to take time to work through the negative equity positions. That's really at the heart of so much of this.
It really is. We've got 45 seconds. Unemployment effect on foreclosures. I mean, usually it's probably almost an instigator, and this time it's coming after the damage, but it's increasing the problem.
Absolutely. It's really exacerbating it, and it's why you're seeing areas that were not, subprime focused at all, being dragged into the overall problem, because their, you know, prices have gone down. The homeowners, one or two of them, have lost their jobs, and they're facing difficult times as well. So it really was a cancer that spread very rapidly.
Well, Leslie, we're out of time again. Thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it, you taking time from your busy schedule.
You're welcome, Bruce. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.